All right, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I am joined by James Murphy this week. James, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Holidays are here.
Yeah, but it's a pretty nice time of the year. Weather outside has been a little ugly, gray, rainy. I just want to stay inside and be off work type. Deal, and it being not too far from Christmas does not help.
Yeah, it's been the sun's had a little trouble breaking through our neck of the woods these past couple of days.
So it is I don't know, maybe not quite hoodie weather. It's just kind of
windbreaker weather.
Sure, I guess. But some of us were working this weekend while others were enjoying themselves. I was down in New Orleans having a good time and then watching my Washington Commanders beat the New Orleans Saints. Meanwhile, James, you were actually working.
Yes, I was working at the friendly confines of Cadence Bank Arena in downtown Tupelo. Mississippi State men's and women's basketball had a doubleheader going. I got to cover the women's game. They played Belmont, not the high school, the college up in Tennessee. Very good game, and I think it was a statement win, not just because, you know, afterwards it would, you know, Sam Purcell talked about it being kind of a thank you to the fans who travel an hour plus to Starkville every so often during the season to get down to Humphrey Coliseum and see the team, but also in just the way that they were able to play. They ended up winning 73-70, and this team had prided itself on defense most of the year, but it wasn't really there. You know, they let up a lot. I think they let up the highest field goal and three-point percentages they had all year and still found a way to win. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, how was it having a game at home here? Home for us.
It was pretty nice. Again, I think Cadence Bank Arena just has really nice confines, just pretty good press seating. You know, we could see the court, but we were just kind of behind a couple of people. So I don't know if the view was... I don't know how ideal it was, depending on who you ask, but that was pretty nice and obviously a good setting. Things were up to date. Things were running pretty smoothly. The good press conference area, which was also the workspace area, and they were just able to work. You know, it makes you wonder why Cadence Bank doesn't host more basketball-related events.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting when you think about it. I mean, Tupelo is not like that big of a town, but it does have a decent-sized arena. That I agree with you. I wish that it was used more for things.
As I said, I covered the women's game. And once I got done with the duties that required, I stopped back into the arena for the men's game. And it was almost sold out. So they have no problem getting people in the stands for big enough events.
Really? Because I remember last year, you and I went, not for work, but for... Well, kind of for work because we did a podcast for it.
Loosely for work. We were not on the clock.
Yes. Similar situation last year. State played...
Don't tell... North Texas.
Yes. Yes. I almost say Colorado State. I was like, nope. Different green and white team. And I'll mention Colorado State here in a few minutes. But and it was fine. I didn't think that the crowd that last year was that great from what I remember.
Yeah, I guess there were a couple factors. Being one, it was more of a standalone game on a Sunday where I guess people might not be as willing to get out and about. And this year it was it being not only a Saturday but also a doubleheader, so that way you can kind of almost make a day out of it. You know, let's say you don't live in Tupelo but you live close enough to it where you can travel there for like hit the road for a couple minutes, maybe go to downtown area, then go for either the men's game, the women's game, part of one and all of another, somewhere in between, and just kind of make a day out of it.
Yeah, they list the attendance for the men's game at 3,846.
That checks out. It looks like that.
So, yeah, I feel like for Tupelo, it's pretty decent crowd. I think the thing that when it comes to Tupelo, it's not just the people who live here, but you think about all the assortment of towns that surround Tupelo, and if you combine all that, it's a decent chunk of people.
Right, you'll have folks coming from, and this is just to name a few towns, places like Saltillo, places like Shannon, places like Fulton and New Albany. Just not that far away for a lot of them.
Don't forget maybe the basketball capital of Northeast Mississippi, Boonville.
Very true. Very, very true. And Belmont and Kossuth and Glenn.
Yeah, I'll say there's probably a good amount of competition for the basketball capital of Northeast Mississippi, but that's just what as somebody who moved here like a little less than 2 years ago, when I think of basketball in the area, I think of Boonville personally. But Ingmar, I guess, is also there too.
Yeah, very true. I mean, I believe we referred to Boonville and the surrounding, let's say, region they play. I believe I've referred to it a few times as Mississippi's girls basketball Thunderdome.
That or the region of Dath.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like the former's a little more less graphic. So I try to roll with that a little more.
I don't know. I personally like region of Dath, but
they both work, to be fair.
Yeah. Anyway, bringing it back to college. Just, I don't know, how nice was it to not have to go anywhere? You know, you don't have to go all the way to Starkville.
It was very convenient. It was just about just hop on 45, you see the arena, take the exit right as you see it, and just kind of go from there. So that drive was seamless. And yeah, as I said, the game itself was pretty good, really good.
Yeah, so I guess this is your first impression of watching the Mississippi State women's basketball team in person. What'd you think?
I thought, again, they did pretty good. To be able to win the way that they did, even when the defense didn't really have its best stuff, is very impressive. And, of course, Belmont is a team that vies for the NCAA tournament quite frequently. So you're playing a quality opponent. But, again, even to be able to do that was very... State had their own issues. They had 19 turnovers to Belmont's 12, and you could see that a lot of times when it came to just getting the ball out in transition and couldn't quite get it over midcourt, or maybe they missed a shot and weren't quite able to capitalize on. That was another thing, too, is that they missed quite a few shots, layups, threes, mid-range. A lot of times it wasn't quite falling. And I'd say that was the case for the first three quarters. And then in the fourth, they started to really turn it on. A big reason for that was, I'm assuming I'm pronouncing her name right, Medina Okot. She was in the post, and she had 11 points and 15 rebounds. 7 of those points and 5 of those rebounds came in the fourth quarter. And she was really able to really help them close a gap that they had had trouble doing pretty much all day. And I think that if they can get her going on a more consistent basis, it can do wonders for really helping them to make deep NCAA tournament runs again. Ja'Kyla Jordan, for the entire game, really, but especially those first three quarters, kept them within striking distance. There wasn't a way that she had trouble scoring. If it was from three, she was able to make it happen. If she was able to do some drive to the hoop, she made it happen. Mid-range, she made it happen. I believe she had a behind-the-back layup to put them back up in the fourth quarter. So she's going to be really valuable for them. And the pieces are there. And it's, you know, this time of year, it's just a matter of putting it all together.
Yeah, so Belmont ties it up with just a few ticks left. And State just, like, hucks one up at the buzzer. And there's a foul called, which means three free throws. And Destiny McFall makes it look easy. And State wins by three. Very deceiving scoreline. But what did you think of the ending?
So, in real time, I didn't give it a ton of thought just because everything happened so fast. And I couldn't get the best read of what happened. I assumed that she drew enough contact to warrant a foul, although there is the principle people argue about of, you know, you just kind of hold on to the whistle for the last couple minutes so that you can really kind of let the kids play. I didn't necessarily have a problem with it. There was talk after the game because the Belmont coach did not think it was a foul, and there were people on Mississippi State who were a little surprised it was a foul. I didn't think much of it in real time, but once I saw the replay, which I believe was yesterday, I'm not quite sure how that draws a foul. again, I didn't see it as much enough contact that would warrant necessarily that call, just because the defender's hand was up and they kind of moved backwards. I mean, if you want to say like they just kind of leaned forward, fine. But again, if there was a foul, which I personally did not see enough evidence that I would have called it, but I'm not sure. It did look like McFall initiated most of whatever contact there was, but again, it was pretty minimal from the slow motion replay I saw.
Yeah, I went back and watched the replay, or I watched some highlights from the TV broadcast, and the first time I saw it, like, in real time, it looked like a foul. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And I saw the replays, and then I was like, I don't know about that one. But, you know, I guess you make your own luck. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say so. But I believe it was pointed out that the call was made before, you know, the foul was made before the half court mark, the half court line. So, yeah, I'm just, and again, it was probably a matter of you think the clock's running out and you'd rather get it up with a little bit of time to spare rather than have the clock run out before the ball even leaves your hands. But, yeah, it's just one of those things where real time looks a lot different than slow motion time, and the ref just kind of made the judgment based on the former.
Well, I mean, that would be my thing, though, is that, you know, it was from behind the midcourt line. Why are you even contesting that?
I'm not sure. Maybe it's just a matter of you'd rather the chances of the shot going in be minimal to zero. Maybe it's just one of those things. I'm not really sure. That's a tough one to answer.
Yeah. Alternatively, I would say that Belmont simply should not have given up 32 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and again, they got dominated in the post, and all game they had trouble with rebounds. That was the one thing that Mississippi State had, on top of Jerkyle Jordan scoring from pretty much everywhere on the field. Belmont was out-rebounded all game, and the difference between the fourth quarter and the third quarter, the first three quarters, was Mississippi State was able to convert those rebounds into baskets.
I don't know, just anything else that stuck out to you?
Well, shout out to whoever gave Sam Purcell a pair of Elvis sunglasses. I don't know, I think it was the day before the game. He apparently had a pair of Elvis sunglasses on him and wore them to the press conference, and also started off the game with the press conference with an Elvis reference, saying that I think it was something along the lines of we were either in or dealing with a jailhouse in the first early in the game with a lot of the shots they missed, and that was a fun interview.
It's a lot easier to do that when you win.
Oh yeah, very true.
I know you didn't stick around for the end, how was the energy for the men's game?
It was really good, and you could tell there's a lot of hope for Mississippi State, because as tough as the way the last season ended was, it was a step in the right direction for the program, because, you know, Chris Jans' first year, they make the first four, and then the next year after that, they make the round of 64. And, you know, people could talk about are the steps forward enough, but they are steps forward. And despite a lot of the changes that happened between last year's team and this year's team, there is still an optimism that this team can take yet another step forward, which I think if you asked a lot of State fans would be winning an NCAA tournament game, or maybe just sticking around the rankings, something in that ballpark. I think also had a lot to do with the opponent they were playing. McNeese State is very good. You know, I think a lot of people had them to shock a lot of people. You've mentioned Will Wade and what he's capable of as a head coach. Just being able to compete with a team like that and be able to come out with a victory, there was definitely some excitement in the building.
And they were a tournament team last year, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think they were a very popular 12-over-5 upset pick last year.
But, SEC play is going to get very interesting here in about a week.
Do I understand you correctly yesterday when you said that in either KenPom or the net rankings, the lowest ranked SEC team is still 68th in the country?
Something along those lines, yes. The last SEC team in KenPom right now is South Carolina at 68th. There are no like truly horrible teams in the SEC right now.
There's not going to be a cupcake.
There is not like a Vanderbilt the last few years. There's not a Georgia the last few years. There's not a Mizzou last year who went winless in SEC play, I think. You know, it's just the winner of the SEC might have like six losses in conference play.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Whoever wins that conference tournament in Nashville, they're going to earn it.
Yeah, so, you know, on the men's side of things, the state is 30th in KenPom, which you'd be like, okay, that's great. You know, that's pretty solid. Except that they've got a handful of SEC teams in front of them. Like, you've got number one Auburn, number two Tennessee, number seven Florida, number eight Alabama, number 11 Kentucky, and so on and so forth. So,
and they've still got to play all of them at least once.
Yeah, so we'll see how that shakes out. Also, I want to point out that I believe that Belmont game will go down as a quad two win for State's women. So
okay, mm-hmm. Nice one for them.
So, yeah, exactly. You know, it might not have been the end of the world with a loss, but, you know, pretty solid win. And, you know, with the way the SEC is in women's basketball, you know, a challenging non-conference slate is not exactly, like, necessary. But, you know, getting a decent win.
Right, it can help you out just with not only getting yourself ready for that tough SEC play, but with building momentum heading into it.
But, overall, like, just what do you think of some of these Mississippi schools playing games off-site, I guess? They're technically neutral sites, but they're not really.
Right, just like in different parts of the state that aren't Oxford or Starkville.
Right.
I like it. It's a good way to, because again, these fan bases are not just the people surrounding Oxford and Starkville. They are in tons of different places. And this time of year, I think it's good to be able to make sure you get out to those fans, you know, the ones that are in not just Tupelo, but, you know, I think Ole Miss played in, was it Biloxi this past weekend?
The list I have was the Ole Miss men beat Colorado State in South Haven. They also beat Southern Miss in Biloxi. And then the Mississippi State men beat Utah and South Haven.
Right. The point I'm getting to is like the fans of these Mississippi schools are not just in the areas around schools. They are throughout the state. And to be able to maintain the connection with those fans and really, as Sam Purcell said, just kind of give back to them by kind of going to them and kind of making a statement. I think it's good for rapport. I think it's good to just kind of keep building that. And I think it's something they should keep doing.
It is interesting from a, I guess almost like geographic standpoint. I was thinking also recruiting, but Mississippi is a little odd in that it has two SEC teams, but also like they're not very far from each other. They pretty much occupy the same like geographical area in Mississippi. So I wonder if that's kind of the other part of it is, you know, we really don't have, I mean, obviously Southern Miss exists, but, you know, neither one of them is in Southern Mississippi. You know, I almost wonder if there's just part of that is let's get around to the rest of the state because, you know, there's not really a presence, major, like, Power Four presence down there. Because I feel like I don't really see this happen like that often. I haven't really checked, to be honest, but I haven't really seen it this often where teams play this many like not quite neutral site games. I don't know.
You know, it's tough to say. Yeah, you could definitely make the argument. I mean, we've both been to Hattiesburg to cover separate events, and you know, you could argue there's just as many LSU fans as there are State and Ole Miss. It gets more to be like once you get south of a certain point in Mississippi. Rooting interests are a bit more of a, let's say, smorgasbord, just in terms of there's not one dominant fan base, but there's a collection of them. But, and again, you get to the point of, well, those fan bases are still there, and I assume there were plenty of people being able to go to Biloxi and just places like that. You know, there's the Mississippi Coliseum in Jackson that is an option. And it's, again, it's just maintaining that outreach.
Yeah, I did just remember that Florida played USF in Jacksonville this year. So, like, you know, I guess stuff like that does happen elsewhere. But I just think it's interesting with, I guess, maybe kind of the frequency that Ole Miss and State do it. And it's nice to see State back here. I mean, anyone here, frankly. After, you know, they came back last year after, I think it had been like a decade, 8 years, somewhere in there. It was a decent period of time where, you know, they used to play in Tupelo more often, and then they stopped for a while, and they came back last year. It's nice to see them back again. It's nice to see that that wasn't a one-off. And it was nice to see, you know, that both teams made the trip this time instead of just the men.
Yeah, it was really good to see both teams, which, you know, obviously are on the rise. They've got good coaches. They've got the talent. And, again, it's just good to be able to get back to the fans.
Nice. This is not State or Ole Miss related, but I figure while I have you, how are you feeling about playoff games this weekend?
I'm excited for them. You know, growing up, I loved college football, which was very tough on Long Island, New York, because nobody else cared about it except my immediate family. And even then, it was my dad, my brother, and me. And one of the big things that I was almost kind of bummed about growing up was the huge gap of time in between conference championship week and, quite frankly, meaningful college football games, them being, you know, like the Rose Bowl, the national championship, all of the big ones. And we could delve into how we got in this position, and we can delve into like the good, the bad, the ugly, the somewhere in between. But, you know, as someone who has loved college football for a long, long time, it is going to be nice to see meaningful college football game, not only meaningful college football played in the middle slash late December, but also for those college football games to create a national championship, or at least crown a national champion that really earned it in a way nobody else has before.
Yeah, to me, the sort of like pre-Christmas bowl games do have a nice vibe to them, because that's kind of how I always knew, like, growing up, like, oh, I'm off school for like a few weeks, and I get to do whatever and just hang out with family or whatever, as there's like a, you know, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl is on in the background, right? Makers Wanted something bowl, whatever that was, you know, stuff like that. And I do kind of worry that like all the folks on the playoff will kind of ruin the, I don't know, non-playoff game. Yeah, the non-playoff bowl games, those still do exist. But, I mean, there are enough college football sickos out there that it'll be fine. Plus, there's the Pop-Tarts Bowl. So,
did you see? You saw that trophy?
Yeah, I was the one who told you about it.
Yeah, it was that thing. Listen, as impressive as it is, and as excited as I am to see the winner of the game use it, that thing has to be expensive.
I'm not entirely sold that that is not a fire hazard.
Well, I mean, as long as you keep it outdoors, right? Because if it, let's say, it accumulates smoke, if you're outdoors, if you're on the field, the smoke just goes up into the air.
Yeah. I do think it'd be really funny if during a trophy presentation it just like lit itself on fire and just poof.
So what you're saying is the people working the Pop-Tarts Bowl should have a fire extinguisher on hand?
Yes. Presumably a costumed person with a fire extinguisher.
Now there's a sight to behold.
Yes. Can you imagine Hot Fudge Sunday putting out the fire? It'd be great.
Oh, man. Childhood dream fulfilled.
Exactly. Anyway, you got any big predictions, hot takes, narratives about playoff games this weekend?
Good about playoff games this weekend. We will get at least one upset. And
it will be Penn State, and it'll be very hilarious.
Yes, it will, because because fans of SMU will be especially happy since they were around for 1982, which I believe they finished behind Penn State in the AP poll that year. That was back in the Pony Express era. And now here they are answering what better way to ring in the playoff than by answering a 43-year-old question?
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, they are a team from Texas playing in Pennsylvania in December. So,
a team in December coached by James Franklin. So who knows?
Yes. Well, that's entirely true. But you can't really like doing the whole, yes, we have a great passing attack, let's go play in the cold type deal. But
something's got to give.
Yeah. Yeah. I've told several people this. The funniest possible outcome of the playoffs is James Franklin to lose a home playoff game and for Ohio State to go on a run, just because I think the sheer like chaos that would cause for Ohio State would be very funny now that everybody's off the Ryan Day bandwagon.
Also, I'm very excited for the awesome helmet game that will be Tennessee Ohio State.
Yeah, fair enough.
Great color scheme battle too.
Right, and presumably Tennessee will be wearing white, so it's not too much orange on the eyes.
Yeah, I believe Tennessee is going with the white shirt, white pants, and Ohio State's going with the red pants underneath the red jersey. So might be a little flashback to the old color war days in the NFL.
I don't know. Color rush. We'll find out. It sounds like there are a lot of Tennessee fans going on for that game. But
I think it's not that far away. I think if they wanted to drive up, maybe it's like a 5-6 hours.
I think it's more so that there are a bunch of people who are sort of out on Ohio State after the game. I'm not going to let you talk about that. But yeah, I just thought it was funny. But yeah, any bold predictions on what you think the upset will be?
Bold predictions on what I think the upset's going to be. If I had to pick one, I mean, it might be low-hanging fruit, but Tennessee.
This is like picking the 8-9 in March Madness. I'm flipping a coin. You can't make me pick that. Getting that one wrong does not count.
Well, I don't know. That feels like the best guess.
I'm personally riding with SMU. I think Indiana has a bad matchup against Notre Dame's defense, and God only knows what Clemson's up to.
Notre Dame, I think, would be a very, very scary team. Wouldn't shock me at all if they're playing for the national title.
I do just wish that we got more like on-campus games. I understand that the bowl games need their fix, and that's fine. But I just think it's funny that the top teams don't play a home game.
Yeah, it almost takes away the incentive to get it because, you know, obviously we all know the incentive that home field in college football brings and how it will probably be increased tenfold. And just kind of being able to, develop off of that if you're first round bye.
As someone who's had the misfortune of playing on the road at Autzen in the playoffs in the college football video game, I can assure you that would be a great time for Oregon fans. Arizona State, big reputation as a party school, would be interesting if they had a home playoff game this year. But alas, I will say that. I think the best thing about the playoffs is that we no longer have bad, like, significant bowl games, right? Like, it was always kind of a bummer when you get, like, the Fiesta Bowl, but both teams have either a quarterback who's going to the draft or in the transfer portal, and it's like a 13-10 slop fest, and it's like, this could have been way better.
Yeah, 100%. Although even this year, there have been instances of play, like Penn State's backup quarterback is in the portal already. And again, I think part of it's academics because like, oh, you can't transfer mid-semester. It's like, yes, but you're also transferring in the middle of the most important part of the season. So is there not a balance here?
Yeah, it just seems like impossible because bowl season is, you know, right before, the academic calendar starts, and really with how late the playoff runs down, I mean, the national championship is on January 20th.
Yeah, a lot of schools are starting their semesters that week.
Yeah, it just seems like a situation where you go, surely there's a better solution for this, and it's just like, yeah, I don't really think so.
If there is, it's going to take a long time to find, unfortunately.
I think the only thing would be start the season like a month earlier. But
yeah, probably.
Anyway, you got a pick for national champion?
Oregon. I had them to win the whole thing at the beginning of the year, and although they haven't looked quite as dominant as I thought they would, they give me no reason to believe that they wouldn't survive. Now, did they get a really, really tough draw out of the gate? Yes, but they have not shown enough to me to prove that they can't handle it. They're complete. They They are well coached. And I think the biggest thing for me is that I don't think anybody wants a championship more than Oregon.
That's entirely fair. I just have a lot of concerns about Oregon's run defense. Like, it's really bad.
How much of that run defense is his reputation coming from having a hard time with Ashton Jeanty?
This is like an all-season thing. It's not just the Boise State game.
I mean, I suppose. I just feel like they find a way. Could that make it hard? Yes, but again, I think that, look, the talent's there, and the desire to win's there.
At the risk of aging like milk, I think my sleeper pick is Notre Dame.
Totally reasonable. They've looked like one of the most complete teams in the country for all but one game all season.
That defense is ridiculous. And Georgia is vulnerable right now with the quarterback situation. Frankly, I just don't think they've looked all that good this year. They won the SEC, yeah, and they're the two seed, but it's like somebody had to. You know, and then they get either Boise State, Penn State, or SMU if they can get past Georgia, and it's like they can totally do that. So that's sort of my sleeper. And I think I'm just going to roll with that. I don't know. This playoff this year is going to be so ridiculous. You could tell me, you know, like six different teams end up winning, and I'd believe you, because I just don't think there's a clear favorite. I mean, Oregon is probably the closest thing that we have, but who knows, man?
Here's hoping, for the sake of our picks, for an Oregon Notre Dame national championship.
There'd be a lot of green in that game.
Yeah, a lot of green.
But yeah, I don't know. Is there just anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, that's all the big stuff.
Great. You can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can find James on Twitter at jsmurphymedia. You know, you can find all of our coverage at deepjournal.com. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else?
That's about all on my end.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and have a good one.